Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Just before we jump into the episode this week, I wanted to share a little bit about the Thrive community that I run. It's a place where many like-minded women go to connect and share their experience with getting and staying successfully sober. There are different sections, like the main Thrive community feed, where people post about things that are up and coming or about challenges they're facing, and they get incredible support from other members of the group. It really is a special, special place to be right now. There are also sections to share your milestones, because every win, even the really small ones, are a big thing to celebrate, and we acknowledge that. There are Thrive events, there are the weekly Zoom recordings, so you can go back and see all the weekly Zoom meetings and all the topics that have been covered in those meetings at your own leisure. There's a share sober tips section, and then there are group chats for the first 30 days, the first 100 days, the first year, and over a year. There's a knowledge hub as well, and in the knowledge hub you'll find a place for books and book recommendations. There's a section of how to survive the first 30 days, so if you come in completely brand new to getting sober, you can hit the ground running and find tools and information to get a structure set up for yourself from the outset. There's also my Thrive Sober program, there's a toolkit, there's understanding the brain science, and a space to read and learn about all the topics under emotional sobriety, most of which have been written by myself. So come into Thrive. If you're thinking about it or you're lacking community, I would say just jump in and go for it. And maybe we'll see you in there soon. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm talking to Vanessa, and she's in the Ribble Valley in Lancashire, and she's 113 days sober today, which is awesome, Vanessa. Thank you so much for coming on my show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are before we dive into your story?
Okay, so first of all, thank you very much for having me on today. I'm really pleased to be here. So, as you said, I'm Vanessa. I live in the beautiful Ribble Valley in Lancashire. I live with Rob, my husband, of nearly 7 years. We've been married 7 years in July this year. Our 8-year-old daughter, Florence, and my 18-year-old stepson, Harry, who is currently on a gap year. So he's travelling around Australia, Vietnam and Bali at the moment before he comes back in the summer to go to university in September. We also have two very loud, very crazy, very spirited border terriers, who I've just actually locked away downstairs with two massive bones to keep them quiet, because it's likely that they will bark at some stage during this. So there's myself, Rob, Florence, Harry, the two dogs. I've just started a new job. I work in recruitment as my adult job. I joined a new company last week, which I'll come on to later. I'm an associate director with them, which is great. And I also run a little business on the side, a little sort of side hustle, which I started over a year ago, which is basically a very, very small sort of bespoke catering company. I create and sell bespoke charcuterie and cheese platters, graze boards, graze tables, things like that. But that's sort of fun employment, as I call it, rather than employment. And so that's in the evenings and at the weekends and things like that.
Do you find though with graze, I mean, I love
like mezze,
picky food. Yeah.
Picky food. Do you find yourself just like, yeah, have a little bit of that, have a bit of that?
We used to, and there was a period of time where you couldn't step into a house without getting something presented to you on a wooden board. And my husband joked at one point, we were having breakfast, lunch and dinner on a wooden platter. So we don't actually, I think it's a bit like a busman's holiday. We don't actually eat a huge amount of it ourselves.
Yeah.
And people, whenever they come to our house, always expect a glazed board or a glazed platter of some description. And I love doing them and I love creating them because they're all individual and they're all completely unique and bespoke to each person that I make them for. But if I whip out a wooden board at home, my husband's likely to roll his eyes because he's seen so many of them. So yeah, we don't actually eat that much cheese and meat. He's over it, fully over it.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I love cheese.
Me too. Cheeseaholic.
Yeah, cheeseaholic. So why don't you tell us a bit about your life with alcohol then? Take us back to the beginning and give us the picture.
So I think like everybody really, well, not everybody, it's a bit of a cliche, but with the majority of people, you know, growing up in the 90s, I was a kind of, I suppose, cliche, typical teenager, you know, drinking cheap vodka, bottles of cider. And this is obviously a high school, not anything pre-high school. I'd say my kind of, I suppose, experimenting with alcohol started around probably 14 or 15. I grew up in Norfolk, in a little village on the outskirts of Norwich, which was beautiful but quite rural. And you know, like a lot of these kind of rural locations, there's not a huge amount to do after school and at the weekends, so you find yourself sort of, I suppose, hanging around with people from school, going to the shops, buying things that you shouldn't buy, probably going and sort of frequenting the local park or the rec. And there was a pub actually quite close to where we lived, and I've never seen it since, and I don't think I've seen it anywhere else, but it had an off-sale section around the back of the pub. So almost like a mini shop, mini off license, which was attached to the pub where you could go and buy stuff. And because I was always the tallest and always looked the oldest out of my group of friends, I was always basically dared to go and buy either a half a bottle of vodka or a litre of cider. I remember it vividly. The cider that I used to buy was called Ye Olde English, which I just, you know, just the name makes me cringe now. But yeah, we used to buy cider and vodka and Alka Pops, obviously, when they came into fashion, I suppose, or came on the market, and just go and drink. But it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was a kind of, you know, drinking problem as such as we all rolled around drunk and rolled into our parents' houses drunk. It was just, you know, daring each other to drink and maybe have a cheeky fag and then go home and, you know, squirt toothpaste into your mouth and squirt impulse all over your body and pretending you've not been doing it. But my mum and dad were very, very liberal and very relaxed. So you know, I'd never grew up in a strict family where, you know, even if they'd known that I was doing that, I wouldn't have been told off, I don't think. Because they were so liberal and relaxed, which I think was a great way, looking back on it, to parent me, because I never, I think, probably stepped over the mark like some of my friends. I grew up in a family where drinking was quite prevalent. My mum and dad drank and enjoyed drinking, not to the point of having a problem, by no means, but they enjoyed it. They were very social people. We always had people over for dinner parties, or we'd go to other people's houses for parties. And they've always enjoyed wine. My dad drinks beer. My mum likes gin and tonic. They both drink quite a lot of wine. And I always grew up, you know, having alcohol at the dinner table, for example. Both sets of grandparents were also drinkers as well. So it was just normal for wine and alcohol to be in the house. I think as I grew up out of school and then I went to college, obviously, then you start to drink more because you feel more grown up, don't you? And you think you're a little adult at that stage when you were just 16 or 17. The first time I officially, I call it, got drunk was around a friend's house, and it was drinking Jack Daniels, which I can safely say I've not touched since. Since I was about 15, I just can't smell this. I just don't like the look of it, the colour, the branding, the bottle, the smell of it. When people mention Jack Daniels, it just makes me wretch. So that was the first proper time, and I think probably the first proper hangover that I'd experienced following that. But then, of course, that didn't put me off. And then as time went on, I just started obviously experimenting with other types of alcohol. I also started working at around 16 in a Mexican restaurant, and I worked literally every weekend. I used to work Thursday nights, Friday nights, a double shift on a Saturday, and sometimes on a Sunday. And the girls that I worked with were all older. So when we did a split shift on a Saturday, we'd all go off to the pub and then come back. And I was obviously clearly under 18 at the time, but I drink with all of them, thinking I was, you know, the absolute dog's danglies. And then because I started to look older, because I was very tall, I was sort of 5'11", 6 foot when I was about 17, 18, I could get into pubs and get served without anyone questioning me. So I would just drink whenever I could, really. I then met somebody who was a little bit older than me. We moved in together, bought a house. The relationship moved very, very quickly from just meeting him in a bar to then dating him, boyfriend and girlfriend, then buying a house together, et cetera, et cetera. And that's, I think, probably looking back on it, when my proper drinking began. He drank a lot. He was an electrician by trade at the time. So every night after work, he was in the pub. He had tabs in pubs. He would go into any pub and could drink at any time of the day, whether he had money or not. And if I was with him, we'd always drink. So we'd always have alcohol at home as well. You know, doing the weekly shop, there'd always be alcohol in the weekly shop as well. And that relationship wasn't particularly healthy towards the end. It was quite toxic. And I think because of that, I drank more. I mean, it sounds a bit stereotypical, but... yeah, I was drinking more probably to, I suppose, numb the pain of the relationship being so bad and being so toxic. When we split up after about 5 years, I moved back in with my mum and dad, which is always fun after you've, you know, been an adult and owned your own property. And I decided then I was going to basically just concentrate on me. So I bought my own property after that, started a new job, which was then in recruitment. When I was also, I should go back and say that when I was going out with the guy, I was long-haul cabin crew for a Japanese airline. So I was based at Heathrow, living in Norwich, but based at Heathrow, and driving to these flights. And there was a culture at the time of every time you landed, wherever you landed in the world, you'd throw your bag in the hotel room and you'd go straight to restaurant, pub, bar, club, nightclub, and you just drink basically for whatever period of time you were down route, as they call it. So I remember vividly flying into Sydney on one occasion, and we must have landed at about 5 o'clock in the morning, and everyone went to the hotel room, had a quick shower, got changed, and they were in a pub in Sydney at 7 o'clock in the morning drinking. And, you know, they drink all day, maybe go home, have a couple of hours sleep, do it all again the next day, go back to the hotel, have a couple of hours sleep, get on the plane and go back to the UK. So there was this culture definitely of when I was cabin crew, was just drinking. I was drinking, obviously, you know, when I was away working, being cabin crew, and then coming back and then drinking in the house with my boyfriend or going to the pub or going to a party. So there wasn't really, I don't think, a period of time between me starting to drink at around 14 to this period in my early 20s when I didn't drink. There was no period. There was no dry January, for example, or no detoxing from alcohol at any point. It was just a consistent, constant sort of flow of alcohol. And then we split up, which was probably the best thing that literally ever happened to me. And I moved back in with my mum and dad, but then moved out quite quickly, bought my own property, and moved away from that cabin crew lifestyle and went into recruitment, which is what I'm still in today. But again, going into recruitment back then, there was also, again, this culture of after work drinking on a Friday in the office, parties. Everyone was generally single. There were no children involved at this point. So it was, you know, a fantastic time and a really, really good time to work in recruitment back then. There was, like I said, a definite after work drinking culture, even people going to the pub at lunchtime sometimes, you know, on a Thursday or Friday. I can't imagine that happening now, but
I really remember that actually. When I was working in, I had a job working in Uxbridge, which is sort of like outskirts of London, isn't it? And it was a big IT firm. And every lunch, the bosses and just and a big group of people would go and have two or three pints of Guinness, literally every single lunch.
Yeah.
And then they'd maybe have a drink after work and then drive home. And that was every day. Yeah, like, that was such a big culture, wasn't it? Like, yeah. I don't know if that exists. Maybe in London a bit more. I don't know about locally, but definitely really understand that that kind of office environment, fast-paced, very professional.
Yeah.
And then drinks after work. And at some stage, like in those kind of late 90s, noughties, definitely that would be lunchtime as well. It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely madness. And I remember going out, we'd have sort of every other Friday, we'd go out straight after work and all the girls would bring in their outfits into the office and you'd be in the disabled toilet all getting ready together and, you know, straightening your hair at your desk and people were smoking at their desk and with the window open or the back door cracked open and people were drinking at the desk, getting ready. You know, we were having pre-drinks in the office and then go out to have pre-drinks somewhere. And then, you know, it was just, and it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. And I'm still friends with some of the people from that time of my life. So it's fantastic. I can't look back on that with anything other than kind of happiness about it, apart from the drinking, obviously. And then I was in that kind of, I suppose, that situation for about 4 years. And then I got approached by the company that I worked for to relocate to Dubai. And I kind of thought, well, I was single. I could rent my property out. I felt that I'd sort of, I suppose, thought I'd done as much as I possibly could in recruitment at that time in the UK, which was ridiculous because I'd only been in it about 5 or 6 years. But I took the opportunity to take this opportunity really by the bull by the horns, as they say, and 6 weeks later I was living in Dubai and I went over there on my own and rented my apartment out, said goodbye to my friends, sold my car and relocated, and I was in Dubai literally 6 weeks after I decided to do it. And then I'd gone from this very boozy culture in the UK to an even boozier culture actually in Dubai. And lots of people used to say to me at the time, well, you'll drink less over there because it's the Middle East. And actually it's the complete opposite. And anybody who's worked or lived in the UK will know that actually there's more of a drinking culture in Dubai because 99% of Dubai is made up by expatriates and they're all earning lots. They're all out there having fun.
It's so glamorous isn't it?
It's quite a hedonistic kind of lifestyle. And I really, really genuinely threw myself into that from day one. So I was the kind of typical Dubai, you know, girl on the brunches, the bottomless brunch every Friday, the yacht parties, the boat parties, the villa parties, you know, drinking every night after work if you wanted to. Randomly going to someone's house for a midweek party. It was just, unless you actually experienced it, it's really hard to kind of put into words, but there is so much alcohol there. And people, you know, that were coming over to stay from the UK was, you know, were allowed an allowance of duty free and everyone would bring that through. So there was constantly alcohol in my house. And I remember opening my fridge door once and there was, you know, where you'd normally have your milk and your condiments down the actual inside of the fridge door. It's just different flavours of Absolut vodka and bottles of champagne and boxes of wine and beers and stuff. So, yeah, it was a huge drinking culture over there. And it was seen as there was never, no one was sober in Dubai. You drank, everybody drank. So there wasn't a culture of, oh, I don't want to drink tonight, or I'm doing Dry January, or I'm detoxing, or, you know, drinking is not for me at the moment. It just wasn't an option. You drank or you didn't go out, or you didn't have a social life, if that makes sense. I think it would probably be very, very different now, obviously, because, you know, society has changed a little bit in regards to drinking habits. But it was, yeah, it was a booze fest from the minute I landed. And I was there for nearly 5 years. I was supposed to actually only go out there for 2 years for a sort of 2-year contract, and that flew by, went really, really quickly. And then I stayed for a third year. I stayed for a fourth year. And then my husband, who I'm with now, who we knew prior to me going to Dubai, got back in contact with me. Long story short, we did long distance for about 12 months, and then I relocated back to the UK to be with him. So I kind of said goodbye to this kind of boozy, single, not a care in the world, nurturing of children, tax-free lifestyle, and I'd come back to reality, which was absolutely fine because I was ready for it. And I, you know, I'm a huge believer in things have a shelf life, and you know, good things have to come to an end sometime. And it was the right time personally and professionally for me to leave. But then I came back to the UK and I had this period of time for about 6 months where when you're in a new relationship, because we'd done long distance for a year, but we'd never lived together. So as soon as I'd moved back to the UK, he picked me up from the airport and we moved in together that day. Even though we'd known each other for a long time. We went through that period of time when you first meet somebody where you're out for dinner every other night, you're in the pub every weekend, Friday night's pub, Saturday drinking, Sunday afternoon drinking. So, yeah, it was, again, this kind of period of just having fun, going out for dinner, going away for the weekend. And obviously alcohol was always involved. And he likes drinking. He's always been a drinker, not excessively, not in a bad way. But, yeah, he likes drinking. He's a big rugby supporter. So Guinness is obviously a big favourite of his. Just listening to what you were saying there, he can, you know, has no problems doing 4 or 5 cans of Guinness on a Sunday, you know, when I'm cooking a roast dinner. He loves red wine. So yeah, and he's obviously not sober at the moment. But yeah, we had this period of time, as I said, where we were just drinking around the clock really and having fun and enjoying it and kind of getting to know each other and living together. And then very quickly, quite quickly after moving back to the UK, within 6 months, we were engaged and I was pregnant, which a lot of people said at the time, oh my goodness, how has this happened so quickly? Or is this what you wanted? And it completely was, because obviously we'd done the whole 12 months long distance. He'd come to stay with me in Dubai. I came back a few times in that 12 months to the UK. So I already knew where this relationship was going. And I have this mentality of when I do something, I sort of throw myself into it. Yeah, and I definitely think I threw myself into that relationship, because within 6 months, as I say, we were engaged and I was pregnant. Sadly, I miscarried the baby. I think after that situation, I then obviously drank more. And then very quickly, actually, after I miscarried, I fell pregnant again, which wasn't planned. But I was told at the time to kind of just, you know, let your body do what it needs to do. And then I fell pregnant with my daughter, Florence. And I had her exactly 12 months to the month of miscarrying the first baby. So it was almost cathartic. And it just felt like it meant something to me, the fact that obviously I'd miscarried in the April 2015, I'd had Florence in the April of 2016. And then I breastfed and, you know, threw myself into that kind of mummy world, and didn't drink, I'd say, probably for a good couple of months, because I was so kind of consumed with being a mum. And the last thing I wanted to do was sit in a pub and drink wine when I wanted to be at home, obviously looking after Florence and breastfeeding, et cetera, et cetera. And then I think the older she got, the drinking sort of crept back in. And I've heard on a couple of these podcasts phrase, obviously, you know, wine o'clock and mummy wine. And I've probably said all of that and done all of that. And I had a lovely group of mum friends who I met through NCT when we did antenatal. And I still know them, actually, to this day. And we would go out, obviously, and drink and have wine, and some of them would drink, some of them wouldn't, and we'd go to people's houses and drink, and they were all drinkers as well. So yeah, I've done all that kind of, oh, it's, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock somewhere in the world, let's have a glass of wine. And I think the older children get, the more you kind of, I suppose, return to your old ways and personality and identity. So yeah, the drinking kind of, I suppose, crept back in. And between Rob and I, we've always done Dry January every year. In fact, we're known for doing Dry January, but then we're not known for continuing it or extending it. We always, on the 1st of February, then go straight back to drinking again. So, yeah, booze has always been sort of, I suppose, a part of us, a part of our relationship. I wouldn't say it's excessive. I've not, you know, somebody once said to me, why are you going sober? I've never seen you pissed. And I thought, well, probably because I don't ever let myself get completely, completely annihilated, blackout drunk. But I definitely was drinking too much. And yeah, it would get to the point where I think Rob and I are probably a little bit bad for each other in some ways, because he'd say things like, should we drink tonight? And I'd say no. And then he'd say, okay. And then say, actually, let's have a bottle of wine or a glass of wine. And then he wouldn't persuade me. So we've never, you know, if he wants to do something, I'll let him. And if I want to do something, he lets me. So looking back on it, it's been quite a boozy trip.
A boozy old time. Yeah. Listen to the story, though. Like you say, a lot of people that come on this show, you know, we're all so similar in the, especially, I mean, yeah, that 90s and noughties drinking, the culture. If you've been born into a family where drinking is a part of home life, it was for me. I remember my mum would just put rosé, those round bottles of rosé.
Portuguese.
And they would always be on the table and they would be on the table on a Sunday, and it was just it's just what you did, isn't it? It's just what you did. Like, yeah. I was the same as you, you know, fairly rural town. We just used to go down the park and get drunk all weekend. You know? Of course you do. And then perfect, you just can't get away from it. So I find it fascinating listening to your when you were flying, those stories, because I actually applied. I remember when I was 21, I applied to be a flight attendant with Virgin, and I didn't get through the first round. I think there was like four rounds or something. It was hard to get in. I didn't even pass the first round, but I made friends. I used to do events in my early 20s, like Twickenham rugby events, and you'd help with the catering or this. I used to a lot of girls that were flight attendants and you know, on ones that worked for Virgin, and they would tell me all these stories about the culture and how hedonistic it was. And, you know, back then to me, it all sounded quite glamorous. And then you get into the working world, and it's, you know, lots of people will relate to drinking in the office on Fridays, or drinking at lunch, or heavy drinking after work. Like, that's it. You know, 5 o'clock comes, let's get out. Or Friday nights, just go straight to the pub. I would go straight to the pub and just never have dinner. I would just never join the group that would go out for dinner. It would just be like, no, let's just stay here. We'll have another espresso martini, thank you. Mom and mummy wine time. And it's just, I think you can just see how easy it is to make drinking a very regular part of life. Especially when you're surrounding yourself with people that drink too. So what happened when how did you stop? Like, what happened on the day that you woke up and said, right, that's it, I'm not going to do this anymore?
So I've been thinking about it for a while, and I tried to do it a couple of years ago. In fact, did it in 2020, I remember. I decided to do 3 months, and I thought, well, I can do a month. I've done a month before, so I'm going to try and extend that to 3 months. So I did 12 weeks. And then went back to drinking afterwards. And I don't think I did it for so long that I saw any benefits, because I think I was just constantly counting it down and constantly ticking off. I think I remember having post-it notes and literally putting the number on the day and then ripping it off as if it was a real kind of success that I'd done another day. So I was just counting it down to finishing. In that time, I fell pregnant again in that 3 month period, and sadly miscarried again. So I just kept, it was this kind of cycle, I suppose, of drinking, then not drinking, then falling pregnant, then miscarrying. And not that I put the miscarriages that I've experienced down to alcohol, because I know it's nothing to do with my drinking, because obviously I wasn't drinking excessively. But I kind of started looking at a cycle of when I drink and why I drink. And towards then, I obviously going back to that 3 month period, I then just went back to it as normal. And that was during COVID. So, you know, when everyone else was getting pissed up in their gardens and, you know, having parties in their lounge between them and their husband every night, getting drunk because it was COVID and no one had work the next day, I was trying to be really super sensible and do this 3 month period, which I did. But then, as I said, I went straight back to it. And then we went into Christmas that year and I'd miscarried over the Christmas. And in fact, I went into 2021 in hospital, miscarrying, and which was horrific, obviously. And then again, went back to drinking. So last year, I don't know what it was, and I can't pinpoint exactly what it was or how I felt, but we went to Turkey in October last year on an all-inclusive holiday, and it was a beautiful hotel. I mean, it was just unreal, this hotel. It was pure luxury from start to finish, and you could have anything you wanted at any time of the day. It was all branded. There was none of the local kind of cheap stuff that you would normally stay away from. You know, there were guys on roller skates going around the pool to your beach bed, bringing you cocktails, glasses of champagne. And between my husband and I, we really took advantage of that. And it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. It was probably one of the best holidays we've ever had. But towards the end, I started thinking, I'm going to do Dry January, but I'm going to try and extend it. But I didn't know how long I was going to try and extend it for, because I know that I'd done a month and I know that I could do 3 months. So I was kind of toying with the idea of 6 months. But then I thought to myself, well, what's the point of doing 6 months? I might as well do a year. And then I spoke to my husband about it, and in his usual sort of pragmatic and really rational style, he said, whatever you want to do, I'll completely support you. If you want to do it, I will 100% support you. I won't drink at home. I will, you know, help you. I will guide you. I'll, you know, support whatever decision you make. And so we decided that we came back from Turkey at the end of October. So I had November and December. My parents were coming to stay with us for Christmas. So I said, look, let's just have a bit of blowout for the next couple of months. And we drank and we had a boozy Christmas. And, you know, 1st of December rolled around, and like it is in a lot of houses, it's like, oh, fuck it, it's December, let's drink. And you're drinking throughout the whole of December. But I knew that I was drinking and almost saying goodbye to it, if that makes sense. So then on New Year's Eve, we shared a bottle of champagne. I didn't even enjoy it. And it was my favourite champagne as well. And I just was drinking it thinking, this tastes odd, it smells odd, it feels odd. And I remember Rob taking the glass off me and putting it down and saying, you're done. Don't drink it if you don't want to drink it. So I don't know why I was waiting to midnight to have this kind of official end of drinking kind of, you know, ceremony. So I just stopped drinking probably at about 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve. And I was like, no, I'm done. I'm really done, to the point where I think I even poured the rest of it down the sink, which is completely criminal to some. And to me, a couple of months ago, I would have thought pouring a glass of champagne down the sink is ridiculous and what a waste of money. And that's just down it. And, you know, and then I woke up on New Year's Day and that was it. It was done.
What did you feel when you woke up on New Year's Day? Can you remember? What was the feeling?
Yeah. So, well, I remember just going back a few days, actually, the day after Boxing Day, my parents left. So they were with us for Christmas, which was lovely. And then they left to drive back down south on Boxing Day. And I woke up and I've never felt so grotty as I did the day after Boxing Day. I think everything had just caught up with me from the whole of December. I was tired. I was hungover. I was aching. My head was hurting. I looked rough. I felt a bit bloated. I was dehydrated. I was just done. I was really tetchy as well about the whole thing. But at that point, I knew that I was obviously giving up. So I think on that day, I probably should have done it the day after Boxing Day on the 27th. And then I had a couple of days off, and then we drank, obviously, on New Year's Eve. When I woke up on New Year's Day, I felt just, I don't know, I suppose a combination of really overwhelmed, a bit scared, a bit nervous, regretting my decision, thinking, oh my God, what have I done? Because at this point, loads of people knew I was doing it because I decided to make it public that I was doing it. I was telling friends and family. And of course, it, you know, from a few people, it got there. Why? What do you mean? I don't understand. Why are you doing it? And again, lots of kind of confusion around, but we don't really see you drunk often, or, you know, I've always been a drinker. People know me for liking my wine and champagne or Prosecco or whatever, but I don't think people have, you know, recently, for example, in the last couple of years, seen me rolling out of a club or a taxi. So people were kind of a bit confused by it. And I probably was a bit confused by it as well. But I was, I think, overall excited. And I suppose it was quite cathartic in that I'd made that decision and I'd taken some control back. And at that point, I was doing the usual, downloading the apps. My husband had bought me the book for Christmas, The Naked... The Naked Mind. I'd spoken to people before Christmas who I'd known had done it successfully, who had a bigger drinking problem than me and had done it. So I thought, if they can do it, I can. I'd obviously, you know, gone down the hole, downloading every app possible, following every Instagram account possible, reading lots of different articles, Googling, research, lots of kind of due diligence on it, because I wanted to be as prepared as possible, because I didn't want to just do January and then be like, oh God, I really want to drink on the 1st of February, which I've done in the past. So I wanted to do it properly. And I think by telling people, it made me accountable for it, because I think there's probably a few people out there who are a little bit skeptical about me doing it. And I hate to have that feeling that other people thought that, but it also spurred me on and made me realise that actually, if other people doubt me, I don't need to doubt myself. I'm going to do it. So, yeah.
I really get that. I was the same, actually. I think that because I'd had a couple of stints of not drinking before, a big one, eight months when I was 30, and then 100 days when I was 39. But then had gone back to drinking, quite big drinking. I think that there was definitely this kind of feeling from my circle of friends that, well, you know, yeah, we've heard this before. Like, you know, we'll just give her, she just needs to do the thing. You know, she always likes support. And actually, that really spurred me on as well, I think, because I knew that people might think that. It just made me in more competition with myself, I think. I can definitely do this. And it's so funny as well when you talk about that people were saying, why are you doing this? And it just reinforces that mentality that people's perception is that you need a problem. You need a really big problem with drinking to be able to stop. And actually, you can't just stop because you know it's just not working for you anymore. It's not making you feel very good.
I said this recently. I put a post on my Instagram on my 100 days, which was the day that I was obviously determined to get to recently. And I put, because a lot of people who potentially follow me on there may not have known that I was doing it. And I put on there that, you know, I decided at the beginning of the year to challenge myself to going sober and doing initial 12 months. And where I go after that is obviously a different story. But lots of people, I think, perceived it as me either being an alcoholic or drinking excessively, which I obviously probably the same thing. But I decided that actually I wanted to give up alcohol because I wasn't an alcoholic, but I wasn't behaving very well around my behavior, sorry, around alcohol weren't healthy. So I was probably drinking too much. And it wasn't right for me sort of mentally and physically. And I'm quite proud of myself in the fact that I've done it. But also I think a lot of people as well assume that you must have mental health problems, or you must have some issue because of, you know, something must have triggered this, or something must have happened, when actually I just wanted to do it for myself and nobody else. And I also had a lot of resistance from people that said to me, oh, well, I could never do it. Oh, God. Oh, that's awful. Oh, God, I would never do that. And I used to think to myself secretly inside, oh, I don't care what you can do. It's about whether I can do it or not. And honestly, the amount of times I wanted to literally say to people, I don't care whether you can do it or not.
So
you know, it's when these people are holding a large glass of wine. Oh, I'd never be able to do that, which is fine. And each to their own, kind of no judgment. But it's weird how you're judged because of the decisions and the choices that you make, when actually it's the people that are judging you need to look at themselves, probably.
Definitely. Well, that's it, isn't it? You hold a mirror up to those people. It took me a while to really wrap my head around that, because I too, either you would get those comments or I would tell people, yeah, I'm not drinking because of this, this, and this, and this. Da, da, da. And then they would then say, oh, actually, I'm managing my drinking okay at the moment. You know, I don't really drink a lot. And I think to myself, I didn't ask you about your drinking, actually.
Yeah.
You know, but thanks for telling me anyway. But it just shows you that people, it holds up a, it shines a light, or it holds up a mirror on their drinking. And you know, that's the psychology there. But it's quite bizarre. I mean, I just don't tell people that I don't drink that much anymore, because everybody knows, really. And new people that I meet don't really need all the story. I just say I don't drink. But from my life kind of before as a drinker, all the time they would tell me about their current drinking, their moderation or whatever, you know, when I was by drinking. I'm like, cool.
I think it definitely opens a door, doesn't it, to people, which I think is great, because it kind of gets the conversation going in terms of drinking habits and sobriety. But I think one person laughed even when I told them, as in they thought it was funny. And I remember thinking, well, actually, it's not that funny, because if I told you about all of the things that have kind of prompted this, then it's actually not that funny at all. But yeah, I think everybody's story is different, isn't it? That's what's unique about sobriety. Some people drink a lot less and go sober. Some people are obviously, you know, bordering on real kind of genuine alcoholism and they go sober. So everybody's, I suppose, level is different. I don't really know where I sit within that. I suppose it's somewhere brutally in the middle, because I can give or take alcohol, but what I couldn't do is I couldn't give it up and then stop completely at that stage. I've never been able to do that. I've had the, like I said, the dry January and then the stint in 2020 where I did 12 weeks, but I've never really done longer than that, because I've always been in a situation or scenario where alcohol's involved. You know, growing up in a house with alcohol and working in a Mexican restaurant where there was alcohol flowing all the time. We drink it in the staff room, going into recruitment, being cabin crew, moving to Dubai, there's always been alcohol. And obviously that's my choice. No one's forced me to drink. But I think now, in the world that we live in, the landscape of drinking has changed. Those cultures are definitely changing. And also the perception, I think, of sobriety is changing as well. And I think if we have this conversation in 5 years' time, we probably won't be sitting here saying, oh, everybody's questioning why we're going sober, because it would just be completely normal.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, I love the fact that you can go into a pub now. We went for a family pub lunch on Easter Sunday. It was my parents' golden wedding anniversary as well. And I said to the lady behind the bar, it probably sounded a bit weird, what non-alcoholic drinks have you got? And she looked at me, but she immediately knew what I meant. And she said, we've got non-alcoholic rosé, white wine, red wine, non-alcoholic gin, obviously all the beers. And it was so kind of refreshing to have those choices, because, you know, years ago, somebody said to me, you wouldn't be able to walk into a pub or bar and have any of those choices. It would be a Diet Coke or lemonade.
Yeah.
So I think...
It's so true. So true. And also it's the same in, I think, in Europe and in other countries.
Yeah.
Definitely... even in countries, I know I've been to a few countries in Europe sober, and there's pretty much always an alcohol-free beer at least on the menu, which is great. Like you said, it just normalizes it a bit more. And actually, I don't know if this is still true now, but I know I think it was around Christmas time. There was some study or something that had been performed with Ocado, and alcohol-free beer, Lucky Saint actually, was in the top.
Oh, yeah.
It was outstripping the sales of alcohol
by
a lot. And I think that's fascinating as well. You know, really good. Really good progress. But for you, you're obviously... you know, you're just over that 100 days mark, which is fantastic, you know, 113 days. For you in that 100 days, what has it been like? And what's been the good bits and what's been the tricky bits for you?
Well, I don't want to sound too smug, but it's actually been easier than the first couple of months were easy because I was still riding on the kind of excitement of doing it and the novelty of doing it and people asking me and kind of saying, oh, Vanessa, you're doing brilliantly. And, you know, I've got some really lovely friends that have been really supportive and really kind of championed the whole thing, which has been really lovely. So the novelty of it in the first couple of months was still there, and I was looking every day and counting and, you know, had this constant praise off my husband, who's, you know, my biggest cheerleader, saying he was really proud of me and it's amazing, blah, blah, blah. So the first couple of months, easy. Then I had a bit of a wobble over Easter, actually, because we booked a holiday the first week of Easter to go away to the Suffolk coast, to a beach lodge right on the Suffolk coast, which is actually beautiful. We went last Easter, we booked it again, but it was a bit of a stressful time this year because my daughter Florence had just been in hospital to have her tonsils removed, then got very, very poorly after she came out of hospital with a sort of post-operative infection. I had tonsillitis, which then turned into a chest infection, and we were away during this period of time, which in hindsight, we shouldn't have gone away. We should have just cancelled it. But I thought, oh, fresh air, being in a different place, you know, change of scenery, being away from the house will help and it will be a good medicine, but it wasn't. So I remember the first day we arrived in Suffolk, it was blue skies, super sunny and really warm. And to me, that was kind of perfect rosé weather. And this property that we were staying in was right on the beach with the decking literally overlooking the beach. You know, you can hear the ocean. We were there last year drinking rosé and eating seafood. And this year, I just wanted that kind of memory back and that to have that back again. And I think probably because I was feeling ill, because I was a bit run down, because Florence was poorly, I just wanted to kind of get through it. So I wobbled so much. I wanted to go and buy a bottle of wine. And I went to the local supermarket to get a few bits. And I rang my husband on the way and I said, I'm really, really, really tempted to get wine. And he said, just do it then. If you want to do it again, this is him. Just do it. Nobody's going to, you know, it's not illegal. You're not doing anything wrong. If you want a glass of wine, do it. You know, if you fall off the wagon, if you have one glass of wine and don't like it, then you can pour the rest away. If you have a glass of wine, enjoy it. You're not doing anything wrong. You're an adult. It's your choice. And then I got to the supermarket and I was literally walking around getting all these bits. And I walked down the alcohol aisle and I kind of stood for a moment and looked at all these wines. My favourite one was there and I just walked straight past it. And I thought, right, I'm just going to get some Trip drinks and some Lucky Saint, actually, which I got, and some Heineken's, because I'm in a period of at the moment where I'm drinking those kind of non-alcoholic options because I quite like it. And I went back to the lodge and I said, I didn't do it. And I felt really, I was a bit emotional about it. But then really pleased that I didn't drink, really, really pleased. Almost, if my arm had been long enough, I would have patted myself on the back, because that was the first wobble that I'd had and I got through it. And now I think if I can get through that, then hopefully I won't have any more. And luckily I've not had any more since. I mean, I'm slightly worried about the summer, but then as Rob said to me in the week, a couple of weeks ago, actually, you know, by that point you'll be so far into it, Vanessa, that it won't, I don't think you'll wobble. I think that the longer the period of time goes on that I'm not drinking, the easier it's definitely getting, not the hardest. We're going on holiday back to Turkey in October, actually, with some really, really lovely close friends of ours and their children. So we're all going to the same hotel. It's all inclusive. And my friend, bless her, has already said, you know, I'm just going to not drink as much and I'll support you. And I don't want anyone to not drink on holiday, especially when you've paid to go away to all inclusive. But I'm just going to drink mocktails and the non-alcoholic options. And it will be really, I think, refreshing to be away on holiday and not drink. Because, of course, as we've all done before, you know, we've been to the airport drinking. I drink on the plane. We drink on the plane on the way back. You drink as soon as you land. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited about it, but also a little bit nervous, understandably.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a game changer, I think, going away and doing it sober. So hopefully it'll be a really opportunity for you. But I noticed that you were getting a bit emotional then. What was behind that emotion when you were talking about getting through that craving?
I think just because I did it, just the success of doing it. And I think until you actually are in that situation yourself personally in that moment and then realise that you've succeeded. Yeah, I think just the just feeling happy with myself that I'd done it.
Yeah, it does give you such a monumental boost, though, doesn't it? I always think this with the Evidence Cup. You know, that would have been a really, really amazing opportunity for you to put something in that Evidence Cup because, like you said, you got through it, you got yourself through it, you showed yourself that you could do it.
Yeah.
And that is all about detangling and undoing that wiring that's really strong in your head.
Those kind of habits.
Yeah, exactly. And creating those new neural connections and those new pathways, which is like, no, actually, it is just as good, if not better, to have the alcohol-free option and still enjoy all the things. I think it's just sometimes I think some of those firsts or in situations where we're so used to having the alcohol and we associate all of the pleasure and all of the goodness of that experience to the alcohol, which it doesn't deserve to get the credit for that at all, but it just does, I think, mentally it does. And then we can just show ourselves that actually you can do it and you can actually even have a better time. And I feel like that's the same with Sober Summer and Sober Holidays. Yes, there'll be moments where there'll be a pang where you're used to drinking and you're not doing that behavior anymore, and that will feel a little bit uncomfortable. Of course it does. But the more that you do it and that you strengthen that muscle, that sober muscle, the stronger that you feel in those situations, and the more that you show yourself that actually I just don't need it, I don't wouldn't give me anything, you know. It's like what would, you know, that alcohol have really given you. And it is a nice feeling, I think, when you push through those sorts of moments. I think that I always love that phrase, you know, where there's big discomfort, there's big growth. And it's just an opportunity to grow in that, even in that seemingly small experience where you went to the shop, you looked at the wine, and then you walked past and didn't get it. That's massive, to be honest, in early sobriety. Yeah. And you get so rewarded, I think, by that, just that feel good factor that you had your own back and that you held your own hand and you got through that thing and kind of came out the other side, you know. I think it's
it's definitely, I think, empowering is that to kind of and I remember I drove back and put the stuff away in the fridge, and we sat out on the decking and this lovely rattan furniture, and we had nibbles, and my husband had a beer, and I had a Lucky Saint, and my daughter was playing, and the dogs were running around. And I think it was no different to 12 months ago when we were doing exactly the same thing in exactly the same location. The only difference was I didn't have a large glass of rosé in my hand, and I then didn't go and pour another one, and then another one, and then another one after that, and then wake up the next day and feel like absolute dog shit. So there's a difference, definitely, in how behaviour changes after your habits change. And also I just thinking when you were there saying about phrases, also as well, one that I live by at the moment that I read recently is that if it makes sense to you and if it makes you happy, it doesn't need to make sense to anyone else. So actually, if I don't drink when I'm on holiday, then that's nothing to do with anyone else but me. And people can look at it or perceive it differently or think it's something else or change the narrative, but actually it's my story and it's my narrative. So
I love that. I think that's such a great boundary to have, and you know, that is something that people can struggle with for sure, that they do worry about what people think, or people do want to put everyone else at ease, which might mean relenting and having a drink. And you know, so to have that very firm boundary of yourself, I think is brilliant. You know, like you say, it's your life. Do you know? You get to choose. What do you think's been the biggest gain for you then so far?
So in the first, I'd say the first couple of weeks, or the first maybe 4 to 6 weeks, was asleep. I was just sleeping. I've never ever. I can't remember a time where I've ever slept as well as I did. More energy, obviously, which sounds really cliche, but you know, there's nothing lovelier than waking up at the weekend not hungover. And I've been more productive. I've instrumented other changes in my life during this whole 100 day sobriety. So I've changed jobs. So I was with my prior employer for nearly 6 years, and I actually realized that I didn't enjoy that job for a few reasons. So I thought, right, well, if I can change this about my life, I can change that. And I'm a firm believer in, you know, your work, you've got to be happy in your work, especially in the work that I do. And I'm sitting there every day, all day on the phone to candidates, you know, talking about their perfect job. If I'm not in a perfect job myself, then it doesn't make any sense. Mm. But I think I had more clarity about changing my job because I wasn't drinking. So I definitely implemented other things, healthier options in my life. The sleep, number one. I think my personality hasn't changed, but I think I've become probably more patient in terms of certain situations. I'm more present, definitely, especially at the weekend. Although, you know, I'm quite proud to say that I've never been one of those mums, and I'm certainly not casting judgment on anyone who lies on a sofa all day hungover. When I was hungover, I was still very present. I was still trying to be the mum and, you know, trying to be there for Florence. But I think I'm definitely more present now, more patient. I just feel healthier. I can't really describe it. It's a weird feeling. I just feel different. I suppose I'm a new person as such, and I think there's a lot of work to do still, but it's going in the right direction. Rather than just standing still, I'm kind of moving forward. I'm definitely clearer on a lot of stuff. And obviously, as you know, as everybody says on these podcasts and everything that I read, you look healthier, you feel healthier. You know, people have mentioned about my skin and my hair, and I'm less bloated, I'm less dehydrated, I'm eating healthier. I'm concentrating more than ever on my own self-care. So I've joined a gym, as cliche as that sounds. From the very first week of January, I've been doing weekly yoga sessions, which I absolutely love. Just the best thing that I've ever decided to do is start yoga. And I'm taking vitamins daily. I'm taking collagen daily. I never would have done all of this, I think, 6 months ago. I just wouldn't have bothered. I just probably couldn't have been asked. But now I'm kind of going through that, I suppose, this sort of unofficial self-improvement plan, which I've seen other people do and really admired. So I'm kind of, I suppose, turning around on myself and now doing it for myself.
Brilliant. That's so powerful, isn't it? It's like, I mean, seriously, if you could get that summary of what you've just reeled off, if you could get those benefits, Why would you not start? You know, it's quite mad, really, isn't it, to think that...
But I think people don't understand it unless they're trying it themselves. You know, people don't understand anything unless it's related to them. So, you know, the resistance I've had from people is because they don't understand it, which is fine, and that's normal and that's natural because they've not gone through it. So you can't fully... I've not sort of sat and banged on about the benefits to anyone because I don't want to turn into one of those people that's, you know, you shouldn't drink and alcohol is poison and it's the work of the devil. And please, I'm never going to be that person because I'm always going to be surrounded by drinkers. So I have to get that. I need to get used to that, which is fine. I'm never going to put boundaries in place where I'm not in a pub or a restaurant with alcohol. I just need to be strong and, you know, show resilience there. But people don't understand the benefits because they've never had it themselves. So until you're fully in it, I mean, I remember the benefits in the first week. I just felt better. I just felt more positive and lighter and happier and just at peace with it all, really. And not, I've heard this quite a lot on your podcast, and I've had this. You don't have this kind of constant mental, when am I next drinking? Do we have wine in the fridge? What if somebody pops in later? Is there wine in the fridge? Is it cold? Do we have enough? What time is the shop shut if we need to get more? What are we eating tonight? Do we get red wine or white wine? This constant kind of narrative in your mind about drinking. I don't have any of that anymore because it's water with dinner, a trip drink with dinner, or maybe a lucky thing. And it is what it is. It's pretty simple stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it does simplify things. And it just creates so much space in your head, I think, as well, when all of that chatter is gone.
Oh, God, it does. I mean, I'm a fairly productive person anyway, whether I'm drinking or not. But I had a period of 5 weeks off garden leave where I finished one job and obviously went to start the other one. And everyone said to me, oh, you can just kind of sit about eating cake and drinking tea and watching Netflix. I was like, absolutely not. That's for the evening, maybe. I was just doing stuff in the house, in the garden, and getting stuff ticked off the list, and waking up in the morning, writing lists to be productive and doing things and working on the business, obviously, that I do on the side. And I think you're just more, you have more energy mentally and physically, mental energy as well as physical energy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just been life changing. It really has.
Oh, that's so brilliant. And what's so fab as well is this is 113 days. You know, imagine doubling and tripling that, and you know how much it does change. It does keep getting better. It really does.
Yeah. I'm worried that it's going to kind of, I'm not worried as such, but I want those kind of benefits and those advantages to continue. Mm-hmm. I don't want me to ever wake up and be like, oh, this is a bit shit. Yeah. I want to continue. So hearing that from you is really, really powerful and really nice and lovely to hear that it continues, those benefits continue.
Yeah, it's so funny. When I was around the same as you, I just started on looking on social media and you know, I had the account I've got now, actually, but it was obviously a lot smaller, and strangers would just comment on little milestones and things, which was lovely, and they would say it's the gift that keeps on giving and it gets better and better. And I remember thinking, does it really though? I mean, how can it just get better and better and better? You know,
What else is there to come?
Yeah, what else is there? And I didn't understand it, you know, really, because it's a bit like what you were saying before. You don't know what you can't see because you haven't been there yet. I mean, I'm 5 years in next week, and it has absolutely got better and better for me.
Yeah.
Just in the fact that being present and showing up and having the energy and the clarity to do all the things that you want to do and more. You know, I've got projects in my head backed up. Like, I've got 20 years worth of projects that, you know, I just think I can't do it all now, but I'm definitely looking forward to
all filed.
I'm going to learn how to play golf. I'm going to be one of these like really cool old ladies that's great at tennis. And, you know, I've just got loads of stuff. And I know that I will follow through on those things. Like, I know, I just know that I'll be able to do all those things because alcohol's not limiting me anymore. But even just the simplicity of when you were describing that feeling of waking up at the weekend, I have that all the time still. I still feel like that in the morning when it's Saturday morning, it's early, sun is, you know, just starting to, the sun's, you know, peeping through the curtains. And I think to myself, you know, I feel good. I'm ready for the day. Let's do it. You know, we're doing it. Nothing feels like a chore. I don't get Monday blues. I don't even really have that Friday feeling because it just all blends into that. Every day is good, you know?
Yeah.
It's obviously like there are times when things are a bit rubbish, but just generally everything is like stable and good. And I'm content.
I think just going back to what you said about when you deal with rubbish situations, when I used to deal with rubbish situations, I would drink. But then that's almost like adding fuel to the fire. You're making the situation worse and exasperating the situation by drinking. So now I like to deal with situations with a completely clear head. And I've had some situations over the last couple of months I've had to deal with. And I think, God, if I'd had to deal with those and I was drinking, I don't think I would have been able to deal with it. So one thing that I have noticed as well is every day is fantastic, obviously, in regards to waking up and not feeling like shit. The Monday mornings to me are the big one, because if we'd been drinking a weekend, so had a drink on a Friday, drank on a Saturday, Saturday night, drank over lunch on a Sunday, by the time Monday morning rolls around, you feel like absolute dirt. So the Mondays to me, I just love it. You know, standing in the shower, clear head, clear mind, just ready to go, especially with me starting a new job recently as well and being completely 100% happy with my choice about that and throwing myself into it as much as I have. It's, yeah, the non-drinking aspect of that has really helped.
Do you know what? You get used to feeling like that. That's the thing. It becomes something that you want to protect at all costs. That's your, that's your safe zone, feeling like this. It's so funny. Yeah. I think a couple of months ago, we were out at the weekend in the day with friends and our kids. And one of the people were hungover. They'd had late night and they were up drinking late. And they were just sort of, you could see that they were a bit disheveled, and we kind of had a laugh about it. And it's even in moments like that, I thought, God, I've really forgotten what that feels like. That was my normal though. Every weekend, a bit hungover with kids or without kids, it was just my normal. And hearing and seeing someone else being like quite hungover, they've got a couple of kids to deal with, quite young.
No.
And we're out in the daytime. We're sort of, and I just thought, I have really forgotten what, I've just disconnected completely to that. And it wasn't coming from a place of judgment. It was just sort of in a weird way, it was making me realize just how I was so happy with the choice, just things like that.
Yeah.
Always find the kind
of reaffirming.
Yeah, definitely. And I just thought, I can't imagine what it must feel like to operate in a hangover from the minute that you wake up on a Saturday to the minute
with children,
you go to bed with kids as well. Yeah, young kids. Mm. And just their needs. Their needs are always
so good.
I just think.
But also as well, that's the physical, obviously, the physical aspect of it. But then you have the mental, like the anxiety and the just the stress and the worry and the fear of everything. And I just love the fact that I don't have that anymore.
Love
it.
Yeah,
really powerful.
So powerful. And so, in a way, wrapping up that whole point, that feeling, you always gain, I think, reassurance from that feeling. And that feeling is the feeling that never really goes away, no matter how far you get in. Obviously, I can only speak from my own experience 5 years in. But I have had conversations with people 10 years, 20 years in, and they still say the same things, And I think now I'm in that place where I believe it because I've got five months of data, and that's that kind of gratitude that I got off the booze merry-go-round and I created what is to me a better life. That feeling just that never goes. It's always that feeling, grateful. So if you're open to it, how can we find you and follow you?
So I'm on Instagram at Vanessa Gray 1717. And then I have another Instagram, which people are welcome to follow as well, which is my side business, which is Vanessa Grays. And Grays is spelled G-R-A-Z-E.
I like that. Play on words.
Yes. and as I said before, I kind of share some things on the first Instagram. So Vanessa Gray 1717 about a bit about sobriety, not a huge amount, but that's where I am.
Brilliant. Yeah. Oh, Vanessa, thanks so much. It's really, really good to get to know you a bit today and to get into your story. And thank you so much for making the time and for being so open with us.
Thank you.
Good luck for the next 100%.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. It's been really lovely.
Oh, that's great. Great to hear. And to everyone else, thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.